This is the Quality News Network. South Dakota Democratic Senator Tim Johnson is recovering from brain surgery in a Washington, D.C. hospital today. Yesterday, doctors say the 59-year-old suffered from bleeding on the brain because of a congenital condition. All eyes in the Capitol are on his recovery. If for some reason he steps down, the governor of South Dakota, a Republican, would name a replacement, presumably a Republican, to fill the Senate seat. That would change the balance of power from 51 to 49 to 50-50 with Vice President Dick Cheney as the tiebreaker, and thus the Republicans would regain control of the Senate after losing their majority in the November midterm elections. In a fact-finding trip to Baghdad today, Arizona Republican Senator John McCain said the U.S. should send between 15 to 30,000 additional forces to control the sectarian violence in Iraq. In a central Baghdad shopping area today, armed men wearing outdated police uniforms seized between 20 to 30 Iraqis, though some reports indicate the number may be as high as 70 people. Police reports now say at least 25 of the victims have been released. Also in Baghdad today, the bound and bullet-riddled bodies of 45 men were found. Across the Egypt-Gaza border, the Israelis ordered the crossing shut down, thus preventing the return of Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh, because according to Israeli security officials, he was allegedly carrying millions of dollars in cash, which could be used for terror purposes. This sparked a gun battle with Hamas militants. Israel's high court today unanimously ruled that the military has a right to assassinate members of what are considered terrorist organizations as defined by the state. However, the court issued a note of caution that such operations should be weighed according to the potential harm to innocent bystanders. At the United Nations today, South Korea's Ban Ki-moon became the 8th Secretary General of the World Body. He was sworn in today but will officially take office on January 1st. That's when current UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who served for 10 years, steps down. In London, British police have questioned Prime Minister Tony Blair as part of an investigation into alleged government corruption. However, a spokesperson for Tony Blair says he is not a suspect in the case. Also in London, a British police inquiry has concluded that the 1997 Paris car crash that killed Princess Diana and her boyfriend, Dodi Fayed, was a tragic accident. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. The Golden State Theater is proud to present two-time Grammy winner vocalist Diane Scherer. You've heard her perform with Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, the Count Basie Orchestra, and Ray Charles. Now, don't miss Diane Scherer in a quintet setting Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. Diane Scherer has performed to sold-out audiences around the world. Diane possesses a 3.5-octave range and has been called the new First Lady of Jazz. The historic Golden State Theater is located at 417 Alvarado Street in downtown Monterey. Tickets for Diane Scherer and her quintet are just $29 and $39. For reservations, call 372-3800. The historic Golden State Theater proudly presents Diane Scherer and her quintet Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. 831-372-3800. And on the web, www.goldenstatetheater.com.
A new analysis of federal cancer statistics finds that breast cancer rates in the United States decreased by more than 7% in 2003. The reason for the decline, according to experts, is because millions of women stopped taking hormone pills after a federal study linked those pills to medical problems. The Los Angeles Times reports today that billionaire entertainment mogul David Geffen has made a $2 billion all-cash offer for the newspaper. So far, the paper's corporate owner continues to look for other offers and thus has neither accepted nor rejected the bid. An internet research company reports that online spending this holiday season has increased 24% compared to last year, in part due to free shipping upgrades and other promotional offers. More and more Americans are outsourcing their holiday tasks, such as gift wrapping and stringing up lights, according to the group, the International Concierge and Errand Association. AAA is estimating that more than 65 million Americans will be traveling over the Christmas holiday period, up 1.5 million from last year. In a closed-door meeting today in Nigeria, OPEC ministers decided to keep the levels of oil production unchanged for now. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.54 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 99 points for a record high close of 12,416. NASDAQ up 21, S&P 500 up 12. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's 6 minutes after the hour, 6 minutes after 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. This is, of course, Head On for a Thursday night. I am Bob Kincaid. And you know what? We're working stiffs, pretty much, all of us. We know what it is to eat beans instead of hamburger, and when we're lucky, hamburger, and once in a while, great while, steak. Or, I don't know, if you're a vegetarian, really upscale tofu. Make you gay, by the way. And so we're gonna have some leftovers tonight, if that's all right with you. Gonna have some leftovers. Because I got a couple of things that I didn't get to do justice to last night that I want to make sure that we hit and hit appropriately hard this evening. Before I do that, however, I want to let you know that if you missed the conversation with presidential candidate and Congressman Dennis Kucinich, it is available at the headonradionetwork.com website in the interviews section. You can find it down the right side of the page, and it's all linked up there so you can listen to it at your leisure. Because I think I've listened to it again today, and it hasn't changed for me. It still remains an inspiring expression of what politics in America should be and can be, as opposed to the tawdry, stinking mess that it is. So give it a listen if you haven't already, if you happen to miss it. Also, I went for a wander over on Congressman Kucinich's site, kucinich.us. We've got a banner up at the top of the webpage. You can just click on it. It'll take you straight there. They've got an online community going. You can register. It's free. And there's a chat room there. Now, don't leave this chat room yet. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room is the place to be whenever there is Head On Radio Network horn, that is, programming on the air. But if you want to meet some really, really nice people, pop on over and say hi in the chat room at kucinich.us. Tell them where you came from. Tell them where the home is of real progressive conversation in the United States. Tell them about the horn. Tell them that we're working on a dialogue here trying to save this nation. Pop on by. I'm sure they'll be thrilled to death to see you. And there's all kinds of resources there as well. You can read speeches by Dennis Kucinich. There's some blogging going on. It's a fabulous site. I hope you'll make use of it, especially if you share, Congressman Kucinich's progressive vision for a restored America. Nah, I said we were going to do some leftovers, and by that, the story that was really all over me that we didn't have time to thoroughly address last night as we came to the close of the program had to do with these federal raids. And just to recap for you, something on the order of 1,000 Homeland Security agents fanned out, especially in the American West, and especially focused on Swift and company meatpacking plants. The Federales raided the Swift and Company meat processing plant early this past Tuesday morning after arrest warrants had been issued for, get it, 60 workers. This is all part of, you know, I'd love to have the job of whoever it is in the federal government that comes up with the operation names. This one was Operation Wagon Train. Hello! Operation Wagon Train. Nationwide investigation about so-called undocumented immigrants who are using stolen Social Security numbers of U.S. citizens to get employment, to stay alive, to feed their families. As early as 8 a.m., agents started taking employees away in white and black buses. Most of them were reputedly being held at a federal detention facility in Ogden, Utah. Now, just to recap and remind you of what happened, this was done... this was sleazy. The federal agents came in and took the workers away from their jobs and started sorting them. If the worker had light skin or lighter skin, they got a little blue bracelet. If they had dark skin, they got no bracelet, and they were presumed to be illegal immigrants. The only problem was there were lots of dark-skinned people there who had every legal right in the world, or in the United States at least, to be there because they were American citizens just like us. But it didn't matter because their skin was dark. One of them was a lady named Maria. Told you about her last night. An American citizen headed for break from her job at Swift. And she got rounded up and herded into a group like so much common cattle. And she didn't get the blue bracelet because her skin wasn't light enough to merit the blue bracelet. Gee, many Christmas. Now, they only were after 60 people, but they rounded up in excess of 1,000. And just in case you're keeping score, the Swift plant is a union operation. And the United Food and Commercial Workers are absolutely disgusted over the Bush administration's Homeland Security activities. Because, among other things, these security agents, they showed up in riot gear. Yeah, you know, the guns, the body armor, the helmets, the goggles, the jack boots. Jill Cashin of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union said stormtroopers came in with machine guns, rounded the workers into the cafeterias, separated identified citizens from non-citizens, and then they took away all green cards and put non-citizens onto buses. And she says, we're still trying to find out where the buses went. Children have been left at church daycares. Nobody knows where these people are. When's mommy coming for me? This is when daddy comes to pick me up. Where's mama? We don't know, honey. Where'd mama go? Mama went with people with machine guns, honey. Is mama coming back? We don't know, honey. Where's mama? We don't know, honey. I want my mama. I know. That was the outcome of the bold and the brave of the Department of Homeland Security. Union workers rounded up and treated like animals. You think that there is not a battle for the heart and soul of America, even as we speak? There is. And see, this is the fun part of the whole affair. Did you hear the part about they took away all the green cards? Union cards were no good either. Because that's the nifty part of this whole affair. It was set up from the beginning as an inquiry. We're after people who are using counterfeit documents and fake social, other people's social security. So that way, everyone is presumed guilty. The entire Constitution of the United States turned on its ear. Because dear leader needs some sort of a PR victory right now. He's going on a listening tour to find out what America thinks about Iraq. Well, here's what America thinks about Iraq. Get out now! But he needed some sort of a PR victory, so they trotted out Michael Skeletor Chertoff, who gave an interview to the Minutemen or some bunch of one of those right-wing gangs of freaks. You know, it's bad enough the illegals are here. Now they're counterfeiting our documents. And guess what else happened? Yesterday, within the last couple of days, a federal judge upheld the torture bill. Yeah, really. In the case of Hamdan, who has been held without trial for God knows how long. The Hamdan case, you remember that was the one that went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, nah, this is all illegal as hell. Well, he has challenged the habeas corpus law, the denial of habeas corpus law. What many of us refer to as the torture bill, the torture law. It was upheld as absolutely legal. It creates a lump in my throat when I consider it. Salim Ahmed Hamdan has been held at Guantanamo Bay since mid-2002. U.S. District Judge James Robertson ruled yesterday that he, the judge, was not allowed to hear Hamdan's case. And I have not had time to do the research on Judge Robertson. Would anyone care to guess the political persuasion or perhaps the appointing president for this federal judge? Because one of the tenets, as you well understand, of right-wing judicial thought is that whatever the Congress says goes. Because anything else, for a judge to actually rule on the constitutionality of a piece of legislation would be judicial activism and legislating from the bench. Never mind the fact that the guarantee of habeas corpus with, oddly enough, with no strings attached is contained at Article 1, Section 9 of the United States Constitution, and it says that the writ shall not be suspended except in the cases of rebellion or invasion. And it says may, not shall. Or rather, it says shall, you know, the privileged writ shall not be suspended. Well, guess what that means for the people who were rounded up some of them union workers, members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Guess what that means for them? What Judge Robertson's ruling means for them? Hamdan's lawyer said this is the first time in the history of this country that a court has held that a man may be held by our government in a place where no law applies. You see, what Judge Robertson said is that he said that no query as to why this man is being held indefinitely in prison, that he can't even hear it. Well, Congress took my power away. This is a federal judge. He serves for life. And, you know, I can't speak for every law school in the country, but you know what? I would say that 99% of them, the first case you read when you get in the door is a little ditty called Marbury versus Madison. And the subject matter of the case doesn't really concern us. It is the declaration that was made by Chief Justice John Marshall therein that does. And it was that case and its progeny that established once and for all that the Supreme Court and the judiciary have an absolute right to interpret the Constitution and its meaning. And it has been the law of the land for, dang, way over 200 years. 205, maybe? 204? And it says that a federal judge has the right to review acts of the legislative body for their constitutionality. And it's also a really, really, really old tenet of American jurisprudence that if you've got a law passed by a legislature and you've got a constitutional provision, the Constitution always trumps the law. Always. I'm being told now that this was a Clinton appointee, so I stand corrected, Judge Robertson, but he got it wrong. This is the Marbury versus Madison decision is basically the only way in which you can have a functioning judiciary in this system, and if the court has a de jure right to interpret the law. Now, maybe this all sounds a little gobbledygook and geeky, but you may rest assured it is deadly serious. Because when Judge Robertson said, "Oh, I ain't got no right to hear this," because... Well, what he was saying was that people can be imprisoned without recourse to counsel, without recourse to family, without recourse to the doors of the courthouse itself, and no one may hear them question it. And so for those people taken away to Ogden, Utah, at a detention facility, I wonder if that's one of those new Halliburton detention facilities. Well, that's probably a secret too. These people have no right to question their imprisonment, so the child can go ahead and cry herself to sleep last night and tonight and for the rest of the nights until someone in government, by their own fiat, not by operation of law, but simply based on a whim, some arbitrary and capricious whim, determines that, well, you know, maybe we'll let Maria go home. That's not among the principles upon which this country was founded. Recently unsealed court documents. Oh, look, they did it under seal, secretly. You know, there's another precedent for that. At Merry Oldie England, it was called Star Chamber. And that's where the King's boys got together, and they had a little meeting and decided who the SOB of the week was and convicted him before he even knew he was charged in the Star Chamber. Then they went out and lopped off his head. Recently unsealed court documents show that the Department of Homeland Security had identified 170 identity fraud suspects it wished to apprehend, but the agency wanted to round up as many as 1,000 other workers because it further expected to apprehend persons who are engaged in large-scale identity theft. People from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union say that the total number of detained workers may be higher than 5,000. Where do you put 5,000 people at one time? I'm guessing that Utah probably doesn't have prison facilities to house 5,000 people, but they might have some new Homeland Security built by Halliburton emergency alien detention centers. Is this your America? Or to the 13 Democrats who didn't have the courage to stand up and honor their oath to the Constitution when the torture bill went roaring through the Senate like through a goose? Is that what you senators voted for? Was that what you voted for? Lindsey Graham, the Senate can do without me, but blah, 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 blah. Is that what you voted for, Jay Rockefeller? How about you? The rest of you? 12 mugwumps. Did you vote for the mass detention of people based upon the color of their skin? And when it's re-election time, are you going to be knocking on the doors over there at the United Food and Commercial Workers? We sure could use a campaign donation. You know what? You know what's really sickening? Those 13 damn sure will have their hands out. And they'll go to various and sundry labor organizations. Oh, I'm a friend of labor! I don't think so. So that is where we start tonight. I'd like your thoughts on it. Is it, have I wandered off into the land of the tinfoil helmet by wondering if Ogden, Utah, is the beneficiary? Come on, you internet gods, you. Is there any evidence of a Homeland Security brand spanking new razor wire surrounded detention facility in Ogden, Utah? Where the white buses and the black buses went? Let me know. I think we should talk about this. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about a lot of other things this evening. You are aware, I'm sure, because you know you're not a right wing ditto head. You don't have to wait for this or any other program to come on before you get. Before you find things out, you're out there, you're reading, you're comprehending, you're absorbing, you're processing. So I'm sure you've read somewhere along the way about the little Holocaust conference that was hosted by, what does Bart Kopp call him? It's one of the better names. Oh, yeah, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian leader. He hosted a... this Holocaust thing really wasn't real conference over the last few days. I think we'll talk about that. We'll talk this evening about the manifest shame that has been foisted upon the United States by Dick Cheney. And we got some other high points to hit too. All of this in the Christmas season. All of this in the season of peace on earth to men of goodwill. Damn. Well, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is The Horn.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
They're reading all my mail, they listen on my phone. Sneaking and they're peeking, and I'm never quite alone. They're spying and they're prying, but I shouldn't be alarmed. They're only gonna do it to keep me safe from harm. They call it Homeland Security, so they can do the things they do. But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you? They don't need a reason. They don't need a rhyme. They don't need a warrant. They don't even need a crime. It's all for my own good.
Man, that's great.
Now they're kicking down my door, making sure I really flossed.
Making sure I really flossed. Oh, my. Oh, Agent Fred, how can you stand to look at yourself in the mirror in the morning? Honest to Pete. 25 minutes before the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Cody joins us from the Bay Area. Hey, Cody, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's great to be on. It's interesting that it was James Robertson who issued that decision. He's in the D.C. District Court of Appeals. He's a Clinton appointee. And he actually resigned from the FISA court in 2005. But the ironic thing is that from 1969 to 1972, he served with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law as chief counsel.
Jesus, criminy, you're kidding.
Nope, this is right here off of Wikipedia. And I was I was looking up, there's an interesting another D.C. Circuit case from 1989 that says, amendment of the Constitution by legislative enactment is prohibited. And that seems to be exactly what this torture bill is. The Congress amended the Constitution. You just read that, what was it, Article 1, Section 9.
Mm-hmm.
And they amended it through their own fiat. The Supreme Court has said that the Constitution represents the paramount will of the people. And the Supreme Court also said in 1973 that it is clear, of course, that no act of Congress can authorize a violation of the Constitution.
Well, that seems, I mean, isn't that 1L stuff, Cody?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you brought up Marbury versus Madison, which quotes, among other things, law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts are bound by that instrument.
I don't understand what's so hard to get here. I mean, am I just maybe a couple of chess moves back on the board? Did Robertson do this so that he could set up the case in controversy to go to the Supreme Court? I mean, what?
I have no idea. I do legal research for Erwin Rommel School of Law. I've been 2 days a week working in a law library. This is just black letter law to me. Anybody who doubts what we're talking about. Every county's got a law library. Nice people working there. You can look all this stuff up. I'll be putting it up on my website, powersandmorrison.com, this evening. I'll be putting up links to go straight to fine law so you can see all of my authorities. But this is just a complete evisceration of the Constitution. And,
isn't this just absolutely bass-ackwards, Cody, that giving deference to a congressional statute as opposed to the Constitution?
Absolutely. It reminds me of United States versus Flores and the Supreme Court in 1990 that stated that the separation of powers doctrine in this respect has been completely eviscerated. This doctrine is essential to the preservation of liberty.
Well,
so eloquent, their decisions, but
yeah.
It's rhetoric versus reality right now.
Well, I'm just, you know, there are bills that go through Congress. They get introduced by far-right evangelical Republicans from time to time, things that, you know, bills that say, you know, the federal judiciary shall no longer have jurisdiction over matters involving the flag or matters involving God or his name on a rock. And the theory behind that is that Congress may delineate what the jurisdiction of the federal courts is at any time that it wishes.
In a way that's a really complicated question. I've talked with lawyers about that. That's a deep one. Because, I mean, Congress does make the rules for the court. They write the rules of federal procedure, and the court's job principally is to enforce the law according to the statute. But as you stated earlier, Mulberry versus Madison, their rule, their obligation is also to strike down unconstitutional laws and to hold statutes up to constitutional muster. If they don't pass that test, then that's the court is obligated to strike those down.
Well, Cody, it seems that one of the logical ways to test the right-winger's theory of this would be to say, and, you know, maybe ask Scalia, because, you know, he's the laziest man in judicial history. He wants to sit up there and draw his $170,000 a year for doing absolutely nothing.
He also gets a lot of gifts from West Publishing and whatnot. He gets some kickbacks on the side.
Well, of course he does. I mean, he's not there to work. But, you know, the ultimate question would be to say, can Congress pass a law that says this law shall not be subjected to constitutional scrutiny?
Absolutely not, and it's going to be something that it's a question that has been in the back of my head for a couple of years, and I was hoping that I wouldn't have to actually see that fight. But we're going to have to see this fight.
Well, this is that fight, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just not getting it. It needs for it to become a mainstream fight, it needs media outcry, and these are complicated issues, and the media is so watered down that I don't watch television media, and I watched some last night, and I was appalled at just how oversimplified and watered down everything is.
Well, it's been a while since I was in the back carrel of the second floor of the law library sweating bullets before the constitutional law exam, but I seem to recall something, Cody, that says, among other things, that a statute or a constitutional provision will not be interpreted when it is clear, when the meaning of it is clear from the plain language on its face. Does that strike a chord with you?
It does, and I'll probably do some research on that and see if I can find that case and put it up on my website as well. I think Emilia Sanchez versus United States says it just correct, it's so much more succinctly. It is clear, of course, that no act of Congress can authorize a violation of the Constitution. They also reiterated the same thing, United States versus Ponce. And that's just, it's so clear. We have Article 1, Section 9. Habeas corpus is not too complicated. You don't have to be a legal scholar to understand.
Oh, that's what I'm getting at. The plain language of Article 1, Section 9 would seem not to be subject to just a heck of a lot of the construction, if you will. You know, there's nothing to construe there.
And before 9/11, you would get habeas corpus to say you're a Hispanic immigrant in trouble. Hispanic immigrants are all over the California prison system. It's one of the problems that we have, is that we have a lot of illegal immigration, people in jail, and those people got had habeas corpus provisions, but it seems like now they're trying to erase them, but only erase them for Arabs. It just doesn't, it seems almost a little bit racist as much as it is unconstitutional.
It's exactly racist. Well, let me ask you this, Cody. When we talk about the plain language of something like Article 1, Section 9, does the weasel room for interpretation maybe come in that phrase, except in cases of invasion or, what is it?
Rebellion.
Rebellion. Yeah.
Well, what's the definition? Let's just go to Merriam-Webster's dictionary and read the definition of invasion or rebellion, because we're not in invasion or rebellion as defined by Webster's. They're probably the same if Black's Law has that in there. I don't think you can weasel that. And a guy who was actually arguing to protect the habeas corpus was an unlikely fellow. I think it was it Lindsey Graham, the same guy who wrote the phony brief in front of the Supreme Court, I think was against that whole bill.
Well, he was against it until he was for it. He flip-flopped.
Right, he flip-flopped. But before he flip-flopped, there was some video that I saw on him, and he was saying, and he was using his...
Habeas corpus is one of the cornerstones of our judicial philosophy.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was all wise and benevolent until he got a phone call from somebody in the GOP that said, shut up.
Yeah. Well, I remember his appearance with Bob Schieffer on Face the Russert or whatever, where he said, I mean, he made a big production out of it, Cody. He said, the United States Senate can get along without Senator Graham, but can't get along without the habeas corpus in the Constitution. And, just a mush-mouthed bunch of the grandstanding hypocrisy. I mean, it played really well. I mean, oh, look, there's Lindsey Graham. He's a constitutionalist. And then within a matter of a week, he's out there voting to create exactly the nightmare that obtains now. And yeah, it's Hispanic people, it's Arabic people. You know, we talk about the plain language. Here's another concept for you that the right wing's fond of, and you hear it all the time. The Constitution does not apply to non-citizens.
Right, but that's not necessarily true.
That's a bunch of crap, because if it doesn't apply to non-citizens, then the 13th Amendment becomes effectively null and void.
Yeah, and the only way to really amend the Constitution is in Article 5 of the Constitution, and I scream about this all the time, is you can't just write a law to amend the Constitution. It's very it's prescribed in Article 5. You have to get it passed. It's two-thirds of the Senate and then three-quarters of the state legislature. It has to, isn't that the method to amend the Constitution? An amendment means change it, and this court is saying that this change is okay. They vindicated this change, but that's a violation of Article 5.
Well, the great failure here, you mentioned the media earlier, Cody, the great failure here is in the media's inability to convey to the ordinary citizenry, you know, the lady driving her Cadillac Escalade all by herself down the HOV lane through the middle of Nashville or something, to convey to that lady the fact that what they can do to Salim Hamdan and what they can do to who's the Aussie? David Hicks. What they can do to that guy, they can do to her, or they can do to her precious lumpkin. Because the torture bill is, have you read it yet? It's abundantly clear, especially in the provision about the determination of citizenship, that any person in this country can be held until the Department of Homeland Security satisfies itself that one is a citizen. That's what's at the heart of this roundup. They went, for God's sakes, I mean, at some point, does criminal procedure not have to obtain? Is there no judge in this country, Cody, who will stand up for the rule of law? They had 60 arrest warrants, and they rounded up 5,000 people.
Yes, there was one, Anna Diggs Taylor, when, in her opinion, she said that Bush committed 30 felonies. And that the link to that is on Mike Malloy's website, top right corner, Anna Diggs Taylor link there, and it'll take you to her decision in the PDF file, and you can see where she outlined his impeachable offenses, but she actually outlined criminal offenses, which are also impeachable offenses. But, you know, until you get the media to try to water it down enough to present it to Americans, and they're so scared that Tony Snow will call it bias, that they just, especially NBC, will run and hide if anybody points a finger at them.
Well, you know what? I would, you know, and I guess I'm just funny, Cody, because I would welcome being called by Tony Snow biased, because I am biased. I am biased in favor of the Constitution of the United States of America. And the fact, these originalists, you know, the Scalia up there saying, well, you know, we got to be originalists. You know, but the fact of the matter is, it seems to me the originalist position would be because, you know, and this is what proves there's such confounded hypocrites. Because if for instance, one of their favorite arguments is there is no right to privacy in the Constitution because it is not stated explicitly. Well, all right. There is nothing in the Constitution that says Article 1, Section 9 applies only to United States citizens either. You know, at some point in time, sauce for the goose has to be poured on the daggum gander.
Yeah, it is hypocrisy. He talks that his famous quotes are original intent. There's an article that Nathan Morrison put up, and it talks about how the Scalia was going on and on about original intent, but then compares it to his actual voting record, which is anything, it's the very antithesis of an original intent. I mean, the Supreme Court stated in South Carolina versus the United States, the Constitution is a written instrument. As such, its meaning does not alter. That which it meant when adopted, it means now. So if Article 1, Section 9 meant the habeas corpus, unless in rebellion or insurrection, then when it was ratified in 1791, then what does it mean now? The same thing. That's original intent.
That's what it's, yeah. I mean,
this isn't hard. We're talking, this is real simple concept.
This isn't stuff you have to pass the LSAT to understand. I mean, this isn't even 1L stuff, Cody. This is what you get if you take, an upper level, you know, 300 series American history class.
Absolutely. You said it one time. You sent an email to me, and you said that a little bit of law stuff like this should be in any good liberal arts degree, but it really should be in any good high school curriculum. Just the simple, basic constitutional stuff.
Well, you know, I am very much a creature of the public school system, Cody. And at the time when I graduated, dear old PS69 or whatever in 1981, we did have some of this stuff in our government class, and we had it as early as ninth grade civics. But there was a determination made, and this is the very front. I left high school right as Ronald Reagan was coming on board, and that is part of the assault on the educational system that the Republicans have maintained at all costs, dumbing down the citizenry. You can't have American citizens, you can't have the guy who comes and unstops your toilet being, up and savvy on constitutional principles. The guy who changes your motor oil can't be talking habeas corpus, because that is dangerous to the entrenched power. And
that's why they want to privatize everything.
Yeah.
Especially the schools.
Yeah, if you privatize the schools, then you know you're not going to get much in the way of habeas corpus, but you're going to be up to your armpits in talking snakes.
Yeah, I mean it's mind conditioning the way that it is, and you've just got to really mitigate that too, because the youth is so impressionable that if you don't get the a balanced education, then you're going to believe stuff that isn't true, and that's just exactly what those creeps in the White House and all over the Republican Party want. They have so much funding. They've got the Democrats just beat where the money is because of all the breaks that they've given, the GOP has given to the super rich. Rolling Stone had a great article about the redistribution of wealth, and they talked about how when GM was the largest corporation in America, if you adjust the salary for inflation, people, average auto workers, are making $45,000 a year. Now Walmart's the largest corporation, and the average salary for somebody there is $18,000 a year.
Well, it seems pretty clear there's one of those constitutional law things. It would seem pretty clear we can determine what the intent is, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I really understand that intent. That is, you keep people really poor, and then the education systems in those neighborhoods and those areas becomes really poor.
Well, I don't want to be accused of hyperbole. I don't want to be accused of making something out of making a mountain out of a molehill. I think what we're dealing with in this habeas corpus law, Cody, is a real live, honest to goodness mountain.
Absolutely, it's a little incursion that they always push the envelope. This administration has always pushed the envelope a little bit, and then they step back and they listen.
Yeah, but this isn't the camel's nose under the tent. This is the nose in two humps.
Right, because they've gotten so many noses under the tent in the past, now they have been emboldened, and that's why they're striking harder blows right now.
Well, you know, that's the...
American people allowed this to happen by just...
Well, yeah, we did. And I've got... I'm not going to forget in 2008 or 2010, whenever these mugwumps come up again... I wish I had greater contact with labor organizations than I do, because I would like for union presidents to look these 13 in the eye and say, well, you know, where were you? You know, why couldn't you be bothered to vote against a law that allows people to round up our members?
I didn't know about that until I started listening to your program today. They were rounding up union members. That's got to be a battle cry to what's left of the American Union.
Well, I hope that we're not engaging in too much inside baseball with some of this legalese, Cody. But the fact of the matter is, there was a presumption made on at the time of the roundup, and that was that no documentation was sufficient. They seized green cards. They seized identification. They gave some people blue wristbands that said you're okay, and they gave them out based on lightness of skin tone.
Yeah, what's the 14th Amendment all about?
apparently nothing.
Something about equal justice under the law.
Equal protection, due process, for the love of God.
Yeah, and there's also the Supreme Court is issued the axiomatic edict that people are innocent until proven guilty. And how are people innocent until proven guilty if they never get a trial?
Well, they get a trial. They get a trial by military tribunal.
Nazi show trial.
Well, yeah.
And you know, trials to those people.
You know, it just gets a little bit more terrifying. I can't remember. Was it Niemöller, the guy that wrote the first they came for the communists, and then they and somewhere along in there he says, and then they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing. And then they came for me, and there was nobody to say anything because everybody was already gone.
That's interesting, because that's exactly what Josh Wolf said before they took him to federal prison over 100 days ago. Judith Miller. Sent a letter. There was a benefit for him in San Francisco last week, and they read it, and she had said that she was appalled that he had beaten her record for longest incarcerated journalist.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is a separate topic altogether, Josh, but I remember when they let stenographer Judy out of jail, She was met by some bigwig from the old gray lady who took her to a steak dinner, and she had, and there was some smarmy-ass news article about how she had a big steak and a tall and a big old whopping glass of Cabernet or some such. Nobody, is the editor of the New York Times going to be there when the gates swing open for Josh Wolf? I'm guessing the answer's no.
Nope, and they're doing the same kind of subpoena tricks with Lieutenant Aaron Watana right now. Trying to use the weasel around the law, the due process rights with him, the officer who is being charged with conduct unbecoming an officer for only wanting to deploy to Afghanistan and not to Iraq.
Yeah, I hope his defense succeeds, because the heart and soul of Lieutenant Watada's case is that he says he was refusing to obey an illegal order, which is within the scope of his oath, which also would compel would allow the defense to put on evidence of the illegality of the war.
Yeah, that would be like shooting fish in a barrel at this point.
Yeah. But, you know, to ask a bunch of guys with brass jewelry on a shoulder board, boy, they're, no. That's not exactly, you know, military tribunals aren't exactly anything that you and I would recognize as an independent judiciary.
No, we need fair trials for all these guys, because the burden of proof to charge somebody isn't a lot. And they can't charge these guys, yet they just want to hold them indefinitely. And that's a crime unto itself.
Well, yeah, the burden of proof to hold the guy is a simple question of, is it more likely than not that a crime was committed, and is it more likely than not that this guy's the guy who committed the crime?
And really, it's only a 51% threshold.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if you want to play the mathematical fun and games, it's 50.00000, you know, infinity 1%.
If you don't have that, you need to start letting these people go. It was the general, gosh, I can't remember his general's name, but he said that 90% of the people in Abu Ghraib was innocent. The real outspoken guy. Can't remember his name, but I remember hearing him say that.
Well,
if they aren't innocent, then you need to charge these people.
Well, and you know, there's a difference too between innocent and not guilty.
Right.
I think there's only one jurisdiction in the entire world that allows people to be found innocent.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, we're dealing with people who, we're dealing 90% of people who aren't guilty. Now, right now, you know, you go in and you take a survey, you know, how do you feel about the United States? I hate them. You know, that's what you'd get out of these people that have been kept in prison for no reason at all for 4 years. I hate the United States, they'd say.
Well, it's not just that. Donald Trump was out saying the world hates us, and he's in the business up there at the way top, and he goes out and travels the world and comes to TV and says, the world hates us. It's not just the people locked up there. It's the common
right.
knowledge, and it's becoming the general consensus of the world. We are not the world.
No, and this is not an AIDS benefit either. You know what I mean? This is for the benefit of, I don't know who this benefits. The power structure, I suppose, or the cowards, or the people who are terrified of their own shadows.
The Project for the New American Century, which is the scary document.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And of course, to my way of thinking, it also benefits George Bush, because you know, this was supposed to be a real marquee event. We were going to round up the bad Mexicans, and we were going to prove that they had a high tech
identity theft
counterfeiting ring.
So that they can get jobs and send some minuscule amount of money back to their families in a desperate country.
Yeah, this isn't some credit card huckstering scam. This is somebody who's trying to figure out a way so that when they go La Carta Verde or whatever, that they got something they can pull out and say, oh, see here, look, I'm working for $3 an hour legally. Sickening.
Absolutely. It was fun talking to you, Bob. I'm going to let you go.
All right, Cody, you have a great night. Thanks for all the information.
You too. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. A federal judge who used to advocate for civil rights has declared that he has no power under the Constitution of the United States. Help me, Jesus. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Kincaid.
U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. General Peter Shoemaker also warns his forces, quote, will break, end quote, without new troops and greater use of reserves. In Iraq, presidential contender Republican Senator John McCain called for an increase of U.S. troops to the region. He says 15 to 30,000 more troops are needed immediately to combat sectarian violence. In Baghdad, gunmen have released 25 hostages abducted today in a central shopping area. The kidnappers, dressed in police uniforms, rounded up shopkeepers, street vendors, and customers. 90% of Iraqis believe their country is worse off now than before the war. That's according to the latest survey by the Iraq Center for Research and Strategic Studies. 95% think security has deteriorated since the arrival of U.S. forces. South Dakota Democratic Senator Tim Johnson is in critical but stable condition after brain surgery. The 59-year-old underwent the emergency procedure after collapsing Wednesday. All eyes in the Capitol are on his recovery. If he resigns, the Republican governor of South Dakota names a replacement, probably a Republican. That results in a 50-50 party tie in the Senate, with Vice President Dick Cheney as the tiebreaker. The Republicans would regain Senate control. At the UN today, South Korea's Ban Ki-moon was sworn in as the 8th Secretary General. He takes office January 1st. In Gaza today, the Israelis shut down the Egyptian border, preventing the return of the Palestinian Prime Minister. Israelis later allowed the Prime Minister to cross the border, minus millions of dollars he was carrying for his country. A gun battle at the border erupted, wounding the Prime Minister's son. In London, a British police inquiry has concluded that the 1997 Paris car crash that killed Princess Diana and her boyfriend Dodi Fayed was an accident. The report, released today, indicates allegations of murder and conspiracy are unfounded. In Tonga, more than 700 people were arrested today in connection with anti-government riots there last month. Six people died in fire sparked by the demonstrations. In New Jersey, the State Assembly has approved legislation granting civil unions to gay and lesbian couples. That makes New Jersey the third U.S. state to do so. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hugh Heiser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Fish and Game is trying to find out why more than 1,000 mallards have died over the past week along a southeastern Idaho creek bed. Some were migratory, some local. Officials are now conducting tests, hoping to rule out an avian flu outbreak. Switzerland's Nestle, the world's largest food and drink company, will pay $2.5 billion to purchase the Novartis company's medical nutrition unit. The deal must first receive EU approval. More and more Americans are outsourcing holiday tasks, such as gift wrapping and stringing up lights. That's according to the International Concierge and Errand Association. The owner of the company says, quote, if you have the disposable income, then there is no reason for you to do it yourself, end quote. The LA Times says billionaire entertainment mogul David Geffen has offered $2 billion in cash for the newspaper. The paper's corporate owner continues to look for other offers. AAA is estimating that more than 65 million Americans will be traveling over the Christmas holiday period, up 1.5 million from last year.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
5 minutes after the hour, it's not the final hour. Mr. Peabody has not run up the Wayback Machine. I'm Bob Kincaid. In the conversation we just had, it was our conversation, all of us, with Cody, I referenced Pastor Martin Niemöller's very famous poem. Als die Nazis die Kommunisten holden, habe ich geschwiegen, ich war ja kein Kommunist. Als sie die Sozialdemokraten entsperrten, habe ich geschwiegen, ich war ja kein Sozialdemokrat. Als sie die Gewerkschafter holten, habe ich nicht protestiert, ich war ja kein Gewerkschafter. Als sie mich holten, gab es keinen mehr, der protestieren konnte. When the Nazis came for the communists, I remained silent. I was not a communist. When they locked up the Social Democrats, I remained silent. I was not a Social Democrat. When they came for the trade unionists, I did not speak out. I was not a trade unionist. When they came for me, there was no one left to speak out. We're there. As of yesterday, we are there. Als sie die Gewerkschafter holten. Well, they've come for the trade unionists. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers if you doubt me. People who worked for Swift and Company legally, by the honest sweat of their brow, rounded up by machine gun toting stormtroopers. Operating. Well, hell, that's a paramilitary, isn't it? I mean, isn't that where what we've gotten to in this country? I received a photograph in my email the other day, and I wish I could direct you to it because it's the kind of thing that just makes the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. It won Best College Journalism Photograph of the Year Award or some such. Maybe somebody can post it and direct folks to it. What does it show? Well, it's a little bit of a backed off shot. It shows one of these paramilitary stormtroopers, all done up in his military riot gear, you know, the face shield, the helmet, the machine gun that he can that he can carry in one arm. Do you remember, oh my God, do you remember when the right wing had such an absolute blue, screaming, purple, polka-dotted, wetting themselves hissy over Elian Gonzalez and the flush flemball types and the right wingers of every stripe plastered everywhere they could get at that picture of the guy in the paramilitary gear and little Elian Gonzalez, whom they had come to return to his natural father? Now, that was the Clinton administration, and that was Janet Reno as Attorney General. Janet Reno is a Nazi! You remember that? I remember that. Well, this latest photograph shows a very similarly clad and attired and armed to the teeth stormtrooper with his gun pointed in the general direction through an open bathroom door of a little boy. Oh, I didn't tell you about this one, did I, Agnes? Of a little boy maybe 3 years old with his pants and his pull-ups around his ankles trying to take a pee-pee during a drug raid. You see, this is the America that the Democrats and the Republicans who voted for Samuel Alito have bequeathed unto us, yea, verily. An America where a stormtrooper with a gun watches over a little boy trying to go tinkle. Oh, yeah, the photograph's real. I mean, this is radio. I can't help you. But the photograph is very, very real. It's not photoshopped. I mean, it got examined down to the nth pixel for this college photojournalism contest. Full color. I kid you not. I'd say if the child was more than three, it's a miracle. And you know how it is when a little boy goes to the bathroom. They're not very good with zippers yet. So, you know, that's why you buy little boys, you know, with the elastic and no buckles or belts. And so the pants are all the way down, and you can see his little naked button profile, and he's trying to pee, and he's got a guy with a gun pointed at him. In the general direction, yeah. I mean, it was down in a safe toward the floor position, but it wasn't pointed away from the child. Talk about potty trained at gunpoint. This is, but please remember, I remember getting the email, will you please lay off Samuel Alito? No, sunshine, I won't. And I know that there are middle-of-the-road centrist Democrats out there. Oh, you know, you've got some far-left dogmatic ideologies. You know, by God, it's gotten to the point that, if I'm a left-winger, if I'm a left-winger for believing that there's no place in America for a stormtrooper who's got a gun pointed at a little kid trying to pee, then I'm a left-winger. I'm an anarcho-syndicalist because I think little boys ought to be able to pee in peace and little girls too. But they were waiting to see if he had drugs in his diaper. Oh! You know, because, like I said, I took some grief over the Alito thing because I kept trying to alert America, this nation, the nation of laws and not of men, that there was something fundamentally wrong with a judicial nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States who had authored an opinion that gave a pass to police officers who strip-searched a 10-year-old girl without a warrant. This is the same thing. No, it's not the same thing. It's the next step. God! I try to not come apart at the seams. But then I get faced up with this crap. I don't fire up the computer every morning saying, oh, let me see if I can go find a story about union members being rounded up and carted off to unknown detention facilities in Ogden, Utah. That's not how my day starts. No. My day starts looking for good news. My day starts looking for something happy to report. My day starts looking for positive, uplifting information. And I wind up, you know, like I said, this is leftovers. This is a story from the stack from last night. But this cannot be left alone. Moderate union members, do you think you're safe now? You know, there are, no kidding, I know, hard to believe, there are organized labor people out there who voted for George Bush. Go figure. This is a full-scale assault on the right of working Americans to associate as they see fit freely within the meaning of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. And we... Tell me, I'm completely guilty on this one. I don't watch network news. Did anybody cover this habeas, the torture bill being law being upheld? Did anybody cover it in any kind of depth yesterday? Did any single news outlet except for the yammerhead like me bother to point out the fact that this is not a narrowly tailored statute that applies only to non-American? Did anyone do that? Behind a microphone or a camera, did anyone do that? And if not, why not? Has there been a blast email go out all around the country from various labor organizations standing in solidarity with the disappeared members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union? Has there? I mean, I don't want to be... Screw it. If you can't approach something around hysteria over this, if your hair doesn't catch fire over this, then you're flameproof. Nothing will upset you. This is something to get upset about. And you compare it, like I said, with the photo of Elian Gonzalez and the right wing newsgasm that went on for months. And you got weirdos with guns running around the Idaho and Michigan woods. And people with rusted out pickup trucks driving around during the Clinton administration with bumper stickers that said, "I love my country, but I fear my government." Where the hell are they now? Where are they? Where's the National Rifle Association? This administration poses a greater threat to the right to keep and bear arms than any other administration that has ever occupied 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in the history of this country. And where is the National Rifle Association? In their millions. Why, they're quiet. Because they're being proven to be hypocrites and shameless ideologues. They would no sooner protest a gun-related action by a right-wing Republican president than they would take a pillow and go and smother that sleazy old bastard Charlton Heston in his sleep! They save that for Democrats.
Oh, Al Gore's gonna get your guns!
Somebody's going to get their guns, and you know what? It's going to be hard to muster up a hell of a lot of sympathy for the National Rifle Association when that day comes. The only thing you'll be able to do for the National Rifle Association when that day comes is sit there and read to them again, "Als die Nazis die Kommunisten holten, habe ich geschwiegen, ich war ja kein Kommunist. Als sie mich holten, gab es keinen mehr, der protestieren konnte. When they came for me, there was no one left to speak out." Damn! Cowards. Hello, the coward. And we are up to our necks in cowardice. Cowardly federal judges, cowardly members of the Congress, and I mean Democrats and Republicans alike, sunshine. At this point in time, if the Democrats who were put in power by people who are frustrated and disgusted and heartbroken and agonized over this war will not stand up and end it, then what word else is there than cowardice? What word do you use to describe an elected representative who will not stand up for the Constitution that he swore to defend and uphold than coward? A hero dies but once, a coward dies a thousand deaths. The sad part of that is that the thousand deaths they die, we get to watch each and every one because it has a component that affects our liberty. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Fasten your seatbelt and put your tin hat on.
Oh, Jesus, what?
Consider. They round up 5,000 union members and haul them off. Okay. That's bad enough. They have rounded up other people recently. Has it ever occurred to you that they are getting us conditioned to the point where we will accept mass roundup of, say, Democrats?
Or liberal Democrats, or holders of far left dogma. You know, I don't think they're going to get around to the mass roundup of the Democratic Party anytime soon, Susan. But they will damn sure quietly round up those of us who are making it uncomfortable for the centrists and the moderates and the mugwumps and the blue dogs.
And
sorry, I'm barking. I apologize. I'm stepping back.
Call a spade a spade. That so-called detention center, it's a concentration camp.
Of course it is. Of course it is. If you've got razor wire and dogs and guns and a select population inside being held against their will by the aforesaid, how can it be anything but a concentration camp? Detention center, my ass.
Now, only thing you can do? Buy guns. Buy many, many guns. Learn to use them. Keep them legally, peacefully. Use them to blow up tin cans.
Oh, we're big on plinking around here, Susan.
Yes. But keep them handy. Just remember, keep them handy.
Yeah.
They need them. Oh, and on a more hopeful note.
Yeah.
Last night's interview with Congressman Kucinich, he reminded me of someone.
Who's that?
Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, he does the same thing for me.
I haven't heard that kind of idealism since the Kennedy brothers. And it's about time.
Yeah, it is. It's about time for some inspiration.
Yep. Hopefully it's not too late. Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood.
Anyway, I shall let you go to the other callers. You have a nice night.
Susan, you have a nice night, too. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a wet blanket or anything.
No, I understand. I understand. But I fear there's other people needing to get in. So you have a nice night, and say hi to Agnes.
Will do. Thank you, Susan. Take care. 23 and a half minutes past the hour. Let's go on to our good friend David calling from Maine. David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. You know, I think you're wrong on the whole situation of a three-year-old being the gun pointed at him.
Yeah.
I think he was a suicide bomber from Iran named Ibn Poopin.
Jesus. Oh, God, we can't keep you down, can we?
Well, you know, it's times like this where I think about where people say, do you really have to worry about your guns? And I say, no, you don't really have to worry about your guns being taken away, because here's what's going to happen, people. When we do experience a crash, what is a good way to keep society distracted? Why, it's good to have a vigilante society. The more guns, the better. They're going to be poured on the streets, Bob. I mean, come on, let's not kid ourselves here. In a lot of different places, I feel bad for a lot of the city a lot of the city places, a lot of the crowded urban cities and places like that. I feel bad for them, because the guns, they're just going to keep pouring them in, because, hey, the reason Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver, let the scum kill the scum.
Yeah, I guess there's an element of that.
And I mean, I know libertarians are scared about, they're not going to take your guns away, people. They're not. They want you to keep them. In fact, they want you to keep buying the bullets, because that's a big, You know, if you haven't seen Lord of War, Bob, I really recommend seeing Lord of War. It doesn't take a point of view in the arms dealing community. It doesn't take it's good, it's a bad, it's a neutral kind of movie, and it shows you what happens when this guy named Ivan, I think his name, and a Ukrainian, and he comes to New York, and he realizes that the only way to get out of the 9 a.m. to or whatever 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. lifestyle is the easy route, which was to sell guns. And
right.
People told him, "Oh, you're doing such a great job." But meanwhile, what people didn't see on the surface was in the movie. It explores the relations, how civil wars erupt. Like it pinpoints and explains where the bullets go. They show like the conventions and the conferences and how it all relates and correlates to each other. And one of the things that people don't talk about is, okay, you've got that. You've got the destruction of that, but you haven't seen nothing yet until you see the destruction of his family inside, because he's never home. He's drinking vodka all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people tell me about that they're going to take the guns away, I just shrug my shoulders and say, people, the assembly line's going to keep pumping them.
Well, but see, the other side of that, David, is that... And, you know, I guess it's one of those you-had-to-be-here moments. But
right.
Back in 2000, they trundled out that rotten-brained old Charlton Heston to come to Beckley, West Virginia, and stand in the armory and say, Al Gore's going to get your guns. and people ate that up. I mean, they actually believed that Al Gore was going to set up it's going to be another government program, that's what it's going to be, set up a government program to come around and take away everybody's guns. By 2004, it was John Kerry's going to get your Bibles.
You know, Bob, the people think that the more guns that they have, they want this gun utopia, and I wish I could say something to them that would explain something in a simple statement. But here's the problem. No pun intended, actually pun intended, you're going to get gunned out. You're going to be gun overdosed.
Well,
you really want this kind of society.
Well, but back up just a minute, David. It's not entirely that. You know, let's say I've got a double-barreled shotgun and a couple of handguns. Maybe I've got a long hunting rifle, you know, maybe a 300 Winchester mag with a bolt, with bolt action, synthetic stock, glass
right.
beaded bed and stainless barrel and a 4.5x14 scope. Not that I do. But, you know, I got all those things. And there are people in West Virginia that have literally home arsenals. They buy $10,000 safes to hold their guns and bolt them into the floor, because that's what people go for, because they're easily liquid in a culture such as ours. Let's say you got all of those. The guys that bust through the door have automatic weapons that will fire 200 rounds a minute. You know, we're not going to have the debate about whether or not Lee Harvey Oswald worked the bolt 3 times in 10 seconds.
Exactly, and you know, the thing about it is that's where the arms dealer comes into play. They're going to be on the streets of America dealing out the arms, and we're going to have like these civilian wars that you see in Beirut, Afghanistan, wherever, Africa, with weapons that you could never, and this is what I mean, but a paradise, be careful what you wish for, a gun paradise, because if you really want it, people, it can be obtained, but you're not going to want it once you get it, because you're going to be living, holed up in a society with
welcome to Baghdad.
Right, Baghdad and beyond, Baghdad plus Mad Max. I mean, there is no end, but the reason why I called tonight, Bob, was not that particular tangent, but that was something good to discuss. Today on the Randy Rhoads Show, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a letter that was put up by Philip Martin. Have you heard about this letter?
No, no.
I just sent it to you, by the way. It's on the Lou Rockwell site for anyone who wants to see it, and I suggest everyone put this on the front page where you have, and I'll read it. I can read it, or I can just, I don't know if I have time to read it, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, well, if your phone holds out.
It's a 21-year-old Marine who's about to get sent back for a second deployment in April, and this is what he had to say. And he put his picture up in his email. He's a brave guy, people, so listen to what he says. I'm sick and tired of the patriotic, nationalistic, and fascist crap. I stood through a memorial service today for a young Marine that was killed in Iraq back in April. During this memorial, a number of people spoke about the guy and about his sacrifice for the country. How do you justify sacrificing your life for a war which was not only illegal, but is being prosecuted to the extent where the only thing keeping us there is one man's power and his ego? A recent Marine Corps intelligence report that was leaked said that the war was in the Al-Anbar province is unwinnable. It said that there was nothing we could do to win the hearts and minds or the military operations in an area. So I wonder, why are we still there? Democracy is not forced upon people at gunpoint. It's the result of forward-thinking individuals who take the initiative and risk to give their fellow countrymen a better way of life. When I joined, I took an oath. In that oath, I swore to protect the Constitution of the United States. I didn't swear to build democracies in countries on the other side of the world under the guise of national security. I didn't join the military to be part of an Orwellian 1984 war machine that is in an obligatory war against whoever the state deems the enemy to be so that the populace can be controlled and riled up in a pro-nationalistic frenzy to support any new and oppressive law that will be the key to destroying the enemy. Example given, the Patriot Act, so aptly named and totally against all that the Constitution stands for. President Bush used the reactionary nature of our society to bring our country together and to infuse into the national psyche a need to give up their little-used rights in the hopes to make our nation a little safer. The same scare tactics he used to win elections, he drove on and on about how America and the world would be a less safe place if we weren't killing Iraqis, and that we'd have to fight the terrorists at home if we weren't abroad. In our modern-day emotive society, this strategy works, or had worked, up until last month's elections. My point in this? To show that America was never nationalistic. If anything, they were statalistic, giving their allegiance to the state of their residence. This is shown the fact that the founders created states with fully capable and independent governments, and not provinces that were just a division of the federal government. These men believed that America was a place where imperialistic values would be non-existent, where the people trying to make their lives better by working hard, thinking, inventing, and using the free market would tie up so much of normal life that imperialistic colonization and the fighting of wars thousands of miles away for interests that are not our own would be avoided. They believed the expansion of power could be left to the European nations, the England, France, and Spain of their time. However, this recent and current influx of nationalistic feeling has created an environment where giving up your rights, going to a foreign country to fight a people who did not ask for us to be there, nor did their leaders do anything to warrant us being there, and dying would be considered honorable and heroic. I don't believe it anymore. I don't believe it's right for any Americans to go along with it anymore. Yes, I know that we in the military are bound by the UCMJ and somehow don't fall under the Constitution, the very thing we're supposed to be defending, but sooner or later, there is a decision that every American soldier, Marine, Airman, and Seaman makes to allow themselves to be sent to a war that is against every fiber this country was founded on. I know that when April rolls around, I will be thinking long and hard on that decision, even though we in the military are just doing as we're told and we still have the moral and ethical obligation to choose to do as we're told or to say, no, that isn't right. I believe that if more troopers like me and the professional military, the officers and commanders start standing up and saying that they won't allow themselves or their troops go to this illegal war, people will start standing up and realizing what the heck is going on over there. The sad fact of the matter is that we are not fighting terrorists in Iraq. We are fighting the Iraqi people who feel like a conquered and occupied people. Personally, I have a hard time believing that if I was an Iraqi, that I wouldn't be doing everything in my power to kill and maim as many Americans as possible. I know that the vast majority of Americans would not be happy with the Canadian government or any other foreign government liberating us from the clutches of George W. Bush, even though a large number of us would like that and forcing us to accept their system of government. Would not millions of Americans rise up and fight back? Would you not rise up to protect and defend your house and your neighborhood if someone invaded your country? But we sent thousands of troops to a foreign country to do just that. How is it moral to fight a people who are just trying to defend their homes and families? I think next time I go to Iraq, perhaps I should wear a bright red coat and carry a brown vest instead of my digital utilities and M16. Notice I never use the word homeland in any of this. I have a secondary point I want to bring up now. Never once was the term homeland used ever to describe the country of America until Mr. Bush became a Department of Homeland Security after the 9/11 attacks. Taking a 20th century history class will teach us that the most notable countries in the last century that referred to their country in this way were Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. Hitler used the term fatherland to drum up support, nationalistic support for his growing war machine. He used the nationalism he created in the minds of the Germans to justify the sacrifice of their livelihood, to build the war machine, to get back their power from the oppressive restrictions the English and French had put on them at Versailles. This is the same feeling that has been virulently infecting the American psyche in the last 100 years. This is the same feeling that consoles a mother after her son is killed in an attempt to prosecute an aggressor's war 10,000 miles away. It's also known as patriotism these days, but I say no more. No more nationalistic inanity, no more passing it off as patriotism. Patriotism is learning and educating oneself to understand what their country really stands for. I heard a lot during the memorial service about how the dead Marine did so much good for others and how his helping others was like a little microcosm of America, helping because we have the power to do so. Well, if we have the power to help people, why aren't we helping in Darfur, where hundreds of thousands of people have died in the last 10 years? Saddam was convicted and sentenced to death for killing 143 Shiites who conspired to assassinate him. I know all you patriotic Americans would be calling for the heads of anyone who conspired to assassinate Supreme Leader Bush. And yet, we spent upwards of $1 trillion and nearing 3,000 lives to help these Iraqis when they don't even want us there. Not to mention, we don't have the legal justification to be there. I guess we should wait around for the omnipotent W. Bush to decide who we should use our superpowerdom to help next. It's about time to throw him and the rest of the fascists out. Moreover, it's about time to start educating Americans about their past and history and letting them know that imperialistic leaders are not what the founders of this great country wanted.
Man.
And the thing that's amazing about this, people should realize, he wasn't afraid to show his picture, and he's not afraid to show his email. He's standing up, people. And I think
I'm going to contact him. I mean,
I think what people should do is they should put, if you have a blog, if you want to post it somewhere, post this letter somewhere, everywhere, so people can see this. Just make it like a viral campaign, because Philip wrote this letter for our country right now. He's at a turning point. He's 21, and these are the thoughts on his mind, and these are the thoughts that a lot of middle America, who's surfing the web right now, they have to see this.
Well, you know, David, I'm glad this guy has come to that. You know, he's 21 years old. Can you imagine?
I know people at 40 years old.
No, he's 20. Well, I'm getting at is this guy is 21 years old, and he has not known a conscious thought in his childhood or up to his young adulthood when the United States has not been lobbing bombs at somebody.
Right.
I mean, think about it. If he's 21, then
he remembers Gulf War.
Well, he doesn't remember. He was probably just getting out of diapers when George started Gulf War I.
Yeah, probably.
That means that, and you know, it was the crumbling of the Soviet Union. But this young man has had to overcome all of that. So, you know, that's hopeful. But by the same token, everything he said, and especially what he said about how would you respond if someone invaded your country?
Right.
Is something that the anti-war crowd movement, people, me, others, have been saying since before this thing started. You know, how hard, you know, this happy horse crap about, you know, we're fighting the terrorists. You know, and George Bush trotted that out not a week and a half ago, David.
There is no answer for that. I remember on the Jerry Doyle show, I asked him that. I just heard a pause on the radio. There is no answer for it. Because they know exactly what it is. They would protect their homes. Come on, people.
Yeah, it's not the terrorists. It's the people who are literally fighting for their very existence.
And you know what, Bob? This isn't left-leaning. It's common-sense-leaning. If you have a family,
well, if it's on Lou Rockwell, you can bet it's not left leaning.
but
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with very much of anything that's in there.
Yeah.
The question for me, you know, he refers to a decision he'll have to make in April.
Yeah.
You know, that I guess he's assuming he's going to be redeployed, or maybe that's his re-update or whatever. The fact that
I'd be scared about being fragged if I was him.
Well, I wouldn't, because you know what? That's one of the tricks of this government and this media. I would guess that when you get right down to it, he probably is speaking words. I mean, there's nothing there that he hasn't heard said in his squad, in his platoon, in his company. You know, it has to be said in hushed tones and whispered voices and outside the earshot of the old man. But these guys know what's better than you or I ever will know. They know what's going on over there.
I know.
They know. They're not fighting any terrorists, and they know it.
I think what he's doing is a good example for people who are in the service right now who are told to shut up. If you're a patriot and you're in the military, to me, you have to do what's morally right. Maybe it's not legally right. I don't know if you ever heard of this movie called Sir, No Sir?
No, don't think
it,
so.
It explains how the Vietnam War was defeated inside the military, like how they decided they would stand up and go to the Briggs. It's a really good movie. I'll send you a link to it on Video Google so you can watch the whole thing.
Oh, cool, excellent.
But basically what it does is it tells you the truth about what was happening, where the whole rumor of spitting on the soldiers started.
Yeah.
One of the things they said that was really important was they said the rumor was so stupid to begin with because they said, if you notice, if you go back to the microfiche back in the 60s or whatever, they said they would come in from the San Francisco airport. Wrong. It would be the Travis Air Base.
Yeah, not a lot of spitting hippies at Travis AFB.
Right. So when they said the San Francisco airport, you could tell that it was just a badly calculated propaganda thing. But going back...
The one thing I would point out in Philip Martin's essay, and you know...
Yeah.
I have a native on, you know, I've got onboard skepticism, David. I want this young man to be for real.
I do too, and
because it gives me hope. But it's his comment about his leadership.
Right.
He said the officers, if the officers and commanders start standing up and
that's
saying
what,
they won't
that's
let,
what I took away from that.
You know, that's this. I hope I don't know if this young man understands what danger he's placed himself in, not with his comrades. But because he's obviously proved his mettle in battle, but with his superiors, because that's incitement to mutiny.
Well, you know, that's the same thing. You know, that's interesting you say that, because in Sir, No Sir, they talked about that. They debated about they go into how the black soldiers went in the brig and got beaten. So in this documentary, you see, like, the veterans who faced that, the brig, what they didn't show on the news, what wasn't on Cronkite, and they talked about how they would round up 100 or 200 black people and put them in the brig. And what they would do is they shut the lights off real fast, and nobody would know who was getting taken.
Yeah.
Then you would hear them being dragged out and screamed, and all of a sudden you just hear this boom, 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 just constantly beating them, and it would be in the dark. It was like a African-American Guantanamo.
Jesus. You know, The thing here is, I know that people with a very passionate attachment to the military will say, well, you know, you can't just have soldiers say, up and refusing to obey orders. You know, a military doesn't work like that. You lose all discipline in the military. Well, you know, when the military is engaged in the furtherance of orders that are illegal, immoral, unjust, and downright criminal in the first place, it almost begs the question that the military has already broken down, David.
You know, to them, I would say, well, what you're saying is true, but eventually, Bob, you have to set a precedent. It has to be somewhere where a turning point occurs.
We passed the laws after Nuremberg.
Right.
And we passed those laws for the entire world. And,
right.
and you know, us, you know, now back then, I'm sure, well, you know, we'd never do anything like that. No, well, not, of course not. But, you know, we have.
Right.
You know, the story, you know, these aren't made up, and they're not fantasies. The fact of the matter, the rape story, the shooting the old men story, the guys that went onto that little island village with orders to kill every military-aged male. You know what? It happened.
You know what?
You know, My Lai happened.
You know, Bob, I agree, and I think that this government had canceled itself out for anything of moral obligation. As soon as they started rolling in Patriot Act and all of that, I believe the military has every right to stand up. And I don't really care if it's not legal. I'm saying, you know what? If you believe that it's not, if you believe that it's not just, it's justified, and you believe it's morally apprehensible, then it, you know what? It's maybe it's not in the Patriot Act, but it's in your heart. It's in your own Patriot Act of what you think it is to be who you are as an individual. And I think there needs to be a turning point where it comes to that. And I think Philip is a perfect example of somebody. And for all those people who want to send him email, you can do so at Grimmy the Dog, GRIMMYTHEDOG, one word together, at Netscape.net. Grimmy the Dog at Netscape.net.
Well, I tell you what, like I said, I very much hope he is real, because it tells me that there is more awareness inside the enlisted ranks of our military than we might heretofore have thought existed, David.
Well, you know, Bob, as soon as I get off the phone, I'm going to be posting this letter some other places where I think it will get a lot of views and a lot of attention.
Well, I know for a fact that one of our news ninjas has already gone to post it on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com site.
That's good.
David, thanks so much.
No problem, Bob. Have a nice night.
You too.
Later.
Take care. Thanks for pointing that out to me.
No problem. Later.
This is a profound piece of correspondence. If you're in the, if you go to the chat room, it's already there. It's linked. Well, somebody will have to relink it when you arrive. But it will be presently posted at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and you can see it for yourself there. Philip Martin, young Marine, 21 years old. I'm glad David brought that to our attention. That's just mind-boggling. His ability to perceive what's going on is what's mind-boggling, because we are told day in and day out, oh, the troops just love being in Iraq. Oh, they're fighting for our freedom. They know better. If you succumb to that kind, to believing that kind of a canard, then you know for a fact that, well, you've been had. And back to the phones. Our good friend Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Peter, welcome to the program. Hope you're feeling better.
Thank you, Bob. I have been under the weather the last few days, it's been kind of rough. I'll tell you, nobody wants to hear about my aches and pains. I'm reminded of the line in Boys in the Band, there's nothing more pitiful than an old queen with a head cold.
Oh, God, you're telling. Don't be so rough on yourself.
I know, but it is funny. You know, I got to tell you, though, I've missed a lot of news and stuff going on, and in fact, I missed the beginning of the program, so I'm not sure if you already discussed Senator Johnson and the stroke and all that stuff.
Not much.
Well, I wanted to give you the Florida perspective. I mean, even being news-deprived over the last few days, you really can't miss this. My latest understanding of it anyway is that no one really knows what the deal is, or even if he's conscious.
Well, I think he's still listed in maybe like critical but stable condition. He had a congenital brain defect that caused bleeding on his brain that they had to do emergency surgery to repair.
Yeah, and of course, on the more selfish side, that of course affects Congress and the split and the House and the whole bit. But I wanted to tell you that in Florida, the Sarasota election is far, far from over.
That's Florida's 13th, right?
Yes, it is. And let's see, her name is Kathy Dent. No, that's the supervisor of elections. I don't have her name here. Christine Jennings is the
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell you that virtually every newspaper in the state of Florida is raging for another election.
Just a complete do-over.
Yeah, everything, the Charlotte Sun-Herald, the Miami Herald, the St. Petersburg Times, the Jacksonville paper, and all the small ones too, and even the television stations are on board. They're all talking about how ridiculous it is to try to count to reassess these machines, which are simply going to give you the same data that's put in, and the fact that the machines, you know, are not showing errors now. Well, you know, everybody knows that the data from those machines is dumped into the central tabulator, and that's where the vote switches happen.
And that's like one PC, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just one PC, and half the time it doesn't have a firewall, and it's hanging on some county, computer network in a county building, and some doofus network administrator
and the last time it was used, it was downloading porn.
Yeah, well, that yeah, that too. But the state of Florida, at least the press, is up in arms. And you know, the Senate doesn't have to accept this guy, even if the state of Florida refuses to.
You mean the House?
Yeah, they don't have to seat him. They have the option of seating the other person if they want to. At least that's my understanding, and I think there's a lot of pressure involved at this point that since the election is this hotly contested, that they should not seat this person.
Well, what are we talking about? 18,000 votes
missing, gone, poof. And this is a very interesting.
I've read some on this, Peter. These are undervotes, are they not?
Undervotes, yeah.
Where the voters went, dang, I got to vote for that dog catcher race. Congress can't be bothered.
Right, and it happened in a county that was critical to the election, and also it's highly disproportionate to the undervotes in all the other counties. So it's very suspect, and no one can say where the votes went. And in fact, there were errors reported about these machines not counting the votes by the people, the election officials who were on site, and by people who were voting. There's lots of people who will stand up and say it just would not take the vote. And
is there a chance of a redo being done?
Well, it's Jeb Bush world, and we've got that Catherine Harris clone in place of Catherine Harris now, and you know that there's going to be everything that's done that possible to prevent that. Her name is Kathy Dent, and she's another extremely important. And even the computer guy that the state of Florida contracted with to run the tests and the machines is a highly partisan fellow from Florida State University who's very actively Republican and chanting on the courthouse steps that he would never be a passive again, and how pro-Republican he was, and so that's their computer expert. The whole thing reeks to him.
Oh Lord! All you need now is a butterfly ballot and a few chads.
Exactly it. And this whole thing about having a paper tape inside the machine recording the vote, so that's just as bad as a chad. The paper tears, the printers don't print, they jam, they misfeed, and you're going to have like. And that which immediately would void the election, just like...
Well, anybody who's ever had a paper jam on their inkjet printer knows what it looks like when the little accordion-shaped piece of paper comes out the other end.
When that happens, I just hate when that happens.
I just put a piece of bamboo under your computer fingernail, didn't I?
Yes, you did, and I've had so much bamboo under my nails lately, I just can't take much more. But I just wanted to tell you guys that there is hope that even if the fellow, God bless him, what's his name, Johnson, I think it was? Johnson's his name, the one who had the stroke, Tim Johnson.
Yeah, Tim Johnson.
Even if he is not able to participate, then there is still another player out there, and this is far from settled, and Florida is up in arms.
Well, the thing with Tim Johnson, Peter, is that the right wing, I went and did a little slumming today, and the right wing has been absolutely ghoulish about this. Johnson's in the Senate. This is a House race in Florida. But, people, what if he's incapacitated? Jiminy Christmas, look at the last two terms in office of Strom Thurmond.
Oh, yeah, and not to mention Reagan, who had
well,
Alzheimer's.
Right. I mean, Strom Thurmond was... Okay, this is tonight's obligatory Star Trek reference. He was like Captain Christopher Pike being wheeled in and, wheeled in and out of the Senate, with one beep for yes and two beeps for no.
He has that same sort of flesh bird look that Pike has. I remember Pike. Oh, God, I stored it on the air. I think I'll have to kill myself.
Yeah, but, no, that's an acceptable snort because we understand that your sinuses are on strike.
Yeah, we'll call it a medical snort. Anyway, I've desperately missed your show. I have no clue what's going on in the world except the Florida election. You just can't miss that living in Florida, so I just had to call.
Well, election, the 3 months after an election in Florida have gotten to where it's like, tuning into Luke and Laura on General Hospital, for God's sakes.
It's pitiful. The place is pitiful. Not to mention the purged voters from the fraudulent felons list who took names from all the states, and if anyone in Florida happened to be an approximate match for a name, they were banned here because they matched a felon in Texas.
Well, right, and the thing, and maybe that gets a little bit lost in the shuffle, Peter, but the fact of the matter is, there was a purge this time through. This election, there was a purge.
Well, I know they never undid the last one. There was another one this time.
I remember reading about it.
Surprised.
You know, so you get this is the purge, and then 18,000 on top of that.
Yep, just gone. No, but
and what's the margin between these two people?
Oh, it's 300 and something votes.
Isn't that just the darndest thing? Wasn't the margin between Bush and Gore 300 and some odd votes?
It looks like they could find a new number range, couldn't they?
Oh, I'm waiting for the thing from Texas in what 1998 or 2000 to be replicated, where the if you take the numerals out of it and then turn them into letters, it turns into ha 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 ha.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Well, I hope you get to feeling better. Thanks for the update.
Yeah, no problem. It's not fatal. My brother-in-law's had it for two or three weeks, and he's finally getting through it. And it's just, you know, the winter crud. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and it's so much fun to have it this time of year.
Oh, yeah. It's joy. Yeah. The dog is thinking of adopting another man somewhere out there. Running ads on Craigslist.
Yeah, doggy's putting down newspapers for you. I mean,
I'll see you guys later.
Take care, Peter. Be well. Poor Peter Peter's our IT guy, and he's just been miserable. And apparently the Florida flu is a real bitch this year. So chicken soup, lots of chicken soup. When you're done having lots of chicken soup, have more chicken soup. Ward this stuff off. Garlic. You know, it's like something out of The Graduate. You know, two words. Plastics. Garlic. Yeah, I know, it's one word. All right, jump right in for the next hour if you want to. It's time for the news. It's time for a little break. I want to listen to this song as we go into the news. I'll tell you a little bit more about it on the back end. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Shoemaker also warns his forces, quote, will break, end quote, without new troops and greater use of reserves. 90% of Iraqis believe their country is worse off now than before the war. That's according to the latest survey by the Iraq Center for Research and Strategic Studies. 95% think security has deteriorated since the arrival of U.S. forces. In Kandahar, a suicide bombing has killed 4 civilians and wounded more than 24. Nearly 4,000 war deaths have been reported in Afghanistan this year, including about 300 civilians. South Dakota Democratic Senator Tim Johnson is in critical but stable condition after brain surgery. The 59-year-old underwent the emergency procedure after collapsing yesterday. All eyes in the Capitol are on his recovery. If he resigns, the Republican governor of South Dakota names a replacement, probably a Republican. That results in a 50-50 party tie in the Senate, with Vice President Dick Cheney as the tiebreaker. The Republicans would regain Senate control after losing their majority last month. In the Sudan, the country today disparaged international threats of sanctions. The government said it would permit UN peacekeepers in Darfur if government leaders received promises they would not be tried for war crimes. Government-backed genocide in the Sudan has killed more than 200,000 people. In London, police questioned Prime Minister Tony Blair as part of an investigation into alleged trades of honored titles for cash. A spokesman said Blair is not a suspect in the case. In New Jersey, the State Assembly has approved legislation granting civil unions to gay and lesbian couples. That makes New Jersey the third U.S. state to do so. In San Diego, the Golden State Fence Company and two of its executives today were fined $5 million and face prison sentences for knowingly hiring illegal immigrants. It's one of the rare cases in which employers face criminal charges for hiring illegal aliens. In Oregon, near whiteout, conditions on Mount Hood are hampering efforts by rescuers to find three hikers missing since Sunday. Another storm is due this evening. Ahmet Ertegun, founder of Atlantic Records and the man who introduced Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, the Rolling Stones to America, has died. He was 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Astronauts aboard the space shuttle Discovery successfully rewired most of the International Space Station today. The work was undertaken by the American leader of the crew and Sweden's first astronaut. One more spacewalk is scheduled on Saturday to complete the job. Adobe broke records on quarterly revenues and posted a 16% boost in profit. The company credited an increase in sales of its Acrobat software. An internet research company reports that online spending this holiday season increased 24%. The company also says customers are delaying buying, in part due to free shipping upgrades and other promotional offers. Costco announced a 10% increase in quarterly profit. The nation's largest wholesale club operator cited strong sales of consumer electronics. Today, the International Trade Commission dumped most of the import tariffs and duties on high-grade steel. Those regulations have been in force for 13 years. The move was applauded by U.S. and Japanese car makers. In a closed-door meeting today, OPEC ministers decided to maintain oil production levels unchanged. However, they are preparing for cutbacks in February of 500,000 barrels a day. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.61 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones set a record up 105 points at 12,422. NASDAQ up 27 at 24.59.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5 minutes after the hour, it's time to do another compelling hour of conversation radio. And I mean that. I told you I'd give you the backstory on the song we went into the break with. Most of you will probably have recognized the incredible voice of Marvin Gaye. The name of the song is I Want to Be Home for Christmas. It's a 1972 recording. The song's author is Forrest Hairston, and it was written specifically to honor the soldiers still fighting in Vietnam at the Christmas season. Our good friend Billy Shears sent the song to me, to us, and he's absolutely right in his estimation that only the date has changed. Sadly, the purpose for a song like that has come back. Billy notes, until the commencement of the war in Iraq, I never thought the song would come to resonate with the urgency of today and sound as if it were written for this time and this war. But with each Christmas season of this current war, each Christmas season that finds us deeper into this quagmire, I Want to Come Home for Christmas is a must-listen. It's not a joyous song like the Christmas song, chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, or White Christmas, or This Christmas. In fact, I Want to Come Home for Christmas puts a damper on your holiday spirit. That's good. As long as we are in a war in which the only Americans asked to sacrifice anything are the men and women in uniform and their families, as long as daily headlines carry the news of two soldiers killed in Kirkuk and three more killed in Anbar and another one in Ramadi and two in Fallujah, our holiday spirit should be dampened. We're lining up outside department stores, fighting each other for the latest toys, while our troops are stuck in a civil war that only the delusional believe isn't getting worse. Whatever one's opinion of this war, from its advent to its descent to chaos, how can anyone not believe that it's time to begin the process that will bring them home? Toward the song's end, as you heard, Marvin Gaye stops singing and talks to his love. They won't be home this Christmas. Our Christmas gifts to them are thoughts and wishes for their safety and a plan for them to be home next year at this time, for the little Christmas tree, the laughter of children, and kissing their babies under the mistletoe. And I agree with Billy, it is a masterpiece. We'll play it again as the Christmas season progresses. The Billy's words, we're lining up outside department stores, fighting each other for the latest toys, while our troops are stuck in a civil war that only the delusional believe isn't getting worse, only underscores for me the profound evil and hypocrisy of the right wing in ginning up this damnable war on Christmas. You know, war is when a thing blows up under your Humvee that didn't have any armor on it because it came from a National Guard unit in Nebraska that was there to get National Guardsmen quickly to, say, you know, a flood relief site. You don't need the armor. But the damn thing blows up under your unarmored Humvee, and war is when the guy shows up on mama's or the wife's doorstep with, we bring you the profound gratitude of a grateful nation, and all of that other palliative stuff. There's no war on Christmas. There's no war on... There's no war on terror, for the love of God. What there is a war on freedom. And sad to say, that war on freedom is not being waged by Ali or Ahmed. That war on our freedom is being waged by cowards who pass things like the torture bill that allows American union members to be rounded up for no good reason. I'm going to come back to that. I may come back to that story tomorrow night. My eyeballs are aching. Because the truth of the matter is, even though from time to time we draw parallels on this program, and you'll hear it on others, to things that have gone before in the 20th century and regimes that have existed in the 20th century and practiced horrors, I think even the least among us, or the not the least, but the most cynical among us, who will draw out the comparisons to the National Socialists of Germany or the Stalinist regime of the Soviet Union, even the most cynical among us harbors some tiny little kernel, some tiny little core of hope that says, yeah, but this is America and we'll get over it and it'll be better and it really won't get its hooks into us like it did then and there. But when I realized they had literally come for the trade unionists, that little kernel, that little core, may very well have died. There is a war on our freedom. There is a war being waged against the soldiers that we have sent to Iraq. But a war on Christmas? I don't think so. But what do I get in my email today? Dateline Los Angeles, December 14th, 2006. As part of its ongoing war on Christmas, the Rational Response Squad has launched a $25,000 campaign to entice young people to publicly renounce any belief in the sky god of Christianity. Called the Blasphemy Challenge, this campaign encourages participants to commit what Christian doctrine calls the only unforgivable sin, blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is an invisible ghost who Christians believe dwells on earth as God's representative. Participants who videotape their blasphemy and upload it to YouTube will receive a free DVD of the hit documentary The God Who Wasn't There, which normally sells for $24.98. Beyond Belief Media, the distributor of The God Who Wasn't There, has donated 1,001 DVDs to the Rational Response Squad for the Blasphemy Challenge. Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. Yeah. War on Christmas, my left hind foot. You know, how do you expect people to respond when you're telling them they have to say Merry Christmas or else? I'm stubborn to the point of being mulish. Obligatory movie reference. There's a great scene when Ilsa Lund walks into Rick's Café Américain in Casablanca. And Bogart says something cool and noir and cynical, like, I remember it as if it was yesterday. The Germans wore gray, you wore blue. And of course, Ingrid Bergman says, yes, I remember that dress. Perhaps I'll wear it again when they march out. Well, you know, I can identify with that a little bit, because I'll say Merry Christmas again when the damn fundies quit telling me I have to. These sorry culture warriors they talk about preserving American culture and American tradition, but what is their real goal is to assault all of those things. This is a segregationist attempt. This is an attempt to round up the secular progressives I see, you're stubborn, you won't say Merry Christmas because Jesus wants you to. Well, you know, it's an attempt to segregate the American people so that you can know by whether or not they say Merry, someone says Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or the Joyous Hanukkah. You can somehow tell whether or not they are real God-fearing Americans. Honest to God, I am at a point where I don't think I could be in the same room with one of these Christmas warriors, because I'd wind up screaming at them. I hate it. What's the death toll out of Iraq today? Do the Christmas warriors know? How many Union members were rounded up in that raid? Do the Christmas warriors know? It goes, you know, it goes on and on. We've Jim Yancey from Southern Mississippi was on this program last night talking about the ongoing effort to rebuild the Katrina damage now and not turn it into an industry that will last for 15 years. Get it done now. He'll be on Cup of Joe tomorrow at noon Eastern talking about it again. Do the Christmas warriors understand that it looks like old Saint Nick's sleigh just won't quite make it to the Gulf Coast again this year? Do they know that? Does it matter to them whether people on the Gulf Coast say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays when neither one of them is even anywhere remotely near true? I'm makes my head ache. But of course, you know, every time you think that you're just your blood pressure is going to go through the roof and you are going to start screaming obscenities and just babbling away and desperately in need of education or medication, Dr. Freud, courtesy phone, in need of medication, you know, you can always count on the right-wing broadcasters, right-wing media pundits. Now O'Reilly's out there, declaring himself he's a culture warrior. Well, he's also insane. And so with that beautiful, beautiful Marvin Gaye song in mind, and knowing that he's out there in the vanguard of the war on Christmas, and we're worried about $25,000 atheists on YouTube, bear in mind that with the knowledge fresh in your minds of the story from Pastor Rutz last night, that tofu causes tofu causes homo. Wow. Can't even say that without just wow. With that in mind, Dr. O'Reilly has come along in his own right. Dr. O'Reilly understands about the necessity for children to be raised by straight parents.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thank you for watching us tonight. What do Mary Cheney and illegal immigrants have in common? That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Last week, we did a segment on Ms. Cheney's pregnancy and her desire to raise a child in a lesbian household. The segment was respectful, even mild. We discussed the role that fathers play in the lives of children and what the lack of a dad might mean. Well, there was immediate outrage on the far left. The loony websites cranked up their propaganda, accusing me of demeaning Ms. Cheney and gay parents in general. Well, that nonsense was picked up by two far-left columnists at the very liberal, Seattle Post-Intelligencer. The secular progressive pipeline strikes again. Now, the strategy here is to intimidate any discussion about gay parenting, no matter how benign. If you question anything, you're homophobic, a bad person. The SPs believe there's no difference between gays raising kids in a mom-dad situation. The SPs also believe there's no difference between gay marriage and straight marriage. And if you disagree, the SP press will try to hurt you.
Yeah, you know, look, the reality is that research's been done, and there is 30 years of that research, and it's incontrovertible. There is no deficit. Children do equally as well when they have two moms and two dads, or whether they have a mom and a dad.
Well, that's your story, but you know the Family Research Council and all the other have all the other data says that is not the case, that there is something missing in the emotional realm. But I don't even want to get into that. Nature dictates that a dad and a mom is the optimum, does it not?
No, because the reality is there's bad dads and bad moms.
So nature doesn't dictate that. So what you're saying to me is that a lesbian couple and a gay guy couple are just as equipped to raise a child as
equipped.
That's
he said
absolutely
equipped.
Yeah, without
no
a doubt. Because
no
love,
difference.
Stability, commitment, kindness, caring, values, morals, discipline, guidance. That's what really makes good parents. And if we want to be worried about what we're going to talk about here, we should talk about what are the qualities of a parent that really make a difference for
all right
a child.
Well, I disagree
that's
with
what
you.
It is.
I'm going with nature.
No, I disagree.
I'm going, Ms. Vincent, I'm going with nature. I'm throwing in with Mother Nature here, and I'm going best case scenario, dad and a mom. Am I a bigot?
No, you're not a bigot for saying that, but nature is procreation. And we're talking about something cultural called parenting.
No, I'm talking about raising kids. I'm talking about, I know there are bad parents.
I
know there are good gay parents.
Right.
I absolutely.
Oh, we haven't gotten
right
to the good part
but
yet.
I'm talking optimum, best for the kid, having a mom and a dad. You going to call me a bigot for that?
Not at all. No. It's
are you
going to,
Miss Chrysler, you call me a bigot for that?
Nope, I'm just going to call you wrong, which you are. So,
you know, I mean, why wouldn't nature then make it that anybody could get pregnant by eating a cupcake? You take Mother Nature. You know the old commercial, don't fool around with Mother Nature? What you're doing is you're taking Mother Nature and you're throwing it right out the window. And I just think it's crazy. I really do. And it's not based on religion or morals or any. You're a good person or the good person. All right. But it's just that you say, hell with nature. The hell with it. We're going to do what we want. It's just as good, and you guys are crazy. And that's what you're saying.
God bless Media Matters for America. I couldn't stay. Some little intern at Media Matters for America actually gets paid to watch O'Reilly every night and go, ha! You know, and pull out the really ha! Parts of it. You know, the ones that make you make the Pee-wee Herman noises. You know, ha! Because he's insane. Did you get that? It's right. The cupcake pregnancy. The cupcake pregnancy. Why wouldn't nature then make it that anybody could get pregnant by eating a cupcake? Why does it have to be a cupcake? Whoa. Agnes, before you jump in, and you're welcome to. You understand it? Oh, what am I doing? I sound so supercilious. You know, why does O'Reilly go to cupcake? I mean, I think this is one of those, you know, the Dr. Freud White courtesy phone moments. Why does O'Reilly go to cupcake? I mean, why wouldn't nature then make it that anybody could get pregnant by eating a cupcake? You know why he goes to cupcake? Who eats cupcakes? Everybody, hands up. You know, this is just like Romper Room. Hands up. Yeah, children eat cupcakes. Why does O'Reilly associate pregnancy and sexuality with children? Profound for a Thursday night. Yeah, dear.
No, I was going back to, you know, why does he reference falafel?
Well, that's just because he's too dumb to know the difference between, you know, he was so head up, as we say here in the Hills and Dollars, that he confused falafel and loofah.
Well, hold on for a second. Isn't he a dad?
Oh, I really don't know.
I do. Yes.
He's
a father.
Something chose to procreate with him?
Yes.
Eww.
And what a good example he is, right? I mean, that would be the perfect marriage. Is that what they're saying? I didn't realize that it...
No, this is just... No, the point here, darling, is that this is no less patent insanity than the tofu defense.
Are they still giving away snowflake babies?
No, you pay. Oh, Lord, you pay and you pay for a snowflake baby. And, you know, they create several snowflake embryos, and, you know, they might implant a half a dozen, four or five of them die. But it's okay to kill snowflake embryos as long as you get one snowflake baby. Day in and day out. Tell me what his raising a stink about whether or not Mary Cheney is actually... I mean, these are right-wingers. I think I understand the real reason they're so terribly... it's hard for them to say anything because it's Mary Cheney. I mean, they're wishing it was like, oh... Angelina Jolie deciding to leave Brad Pitt and go have a hot lesbian relationship and have a turkey baster baby. They wish it was her because they'd be, I mean, they would be running and screaming in the streets, the right-wingers would. But it's Mary Cheney, so they can't. And somewhere deep inside, I know, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. I know how these people think. Somewhere deep inside, the theological bent of some of these people has got them wondering. And what they're wondering is, if she's a lesbian, Mary Cheney, do we know if she's ever even tried to have sex with a man? And if she hasn't, and she has this baby, won't that be, come on, a virgin birth? You know that they're sitting, that they're sitting in their little fundamentalist coffee clutches, quietly whispering about that. Next thing you know, the secular humanists will be saying that she had a virgin birth because she knew not a man. Yeah, that's all it says. That's all it says. How can I be pregnant when I know not a man? You know, I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Next thing you know, they're scared to death. Okay, just, I told you I went slumming by the right-wing websites in regard to the Tim Johnson story. And I saw sleazy things about, please God make him die, things that you expect from right-wingers. But I also, the issue of Mary Cheney was raised a while back, last week it was. And every time something like this comes up, I want to go and see just how vile these people can be. And, last week it was, please let Mary Cheney miscarry. I mean, this is the absolute bottom depth level of the sleaze that is your average Bush voter. Because, you see, that's the point. These are your average, not exceptional, but your average Bush voters. Nothing special. Garden variety. They feast and they feed on hate and agony. Yeah, I don't know if you ran across this or not, but in the debate over Iraq, that intellectual heavyweight, dimebag Laura Bush, hey, don't blame me. That's what they called her at SMU. She showed up on MSNBC this morning with Nora O'Donnell. Really, Nora O'Donnell. I'll be damned. And Laura Bush said, I mean, this is how bad it's gotten for her husband. She's got to go out and carry his water for him. She said, in reference to she was asked why only 21%, there's a new poll for you, only 21% of Americans in a recent NBC poll say they approved of Georgia's Iraq policy. That now means, according to that poll, that Dennis Kucinich represents 79% of the national opinion on Iraq. But Laura said, I do know that there are a lot of good things that are happening in Iraq that aren't covered. And I think that the drumbeat in the country from the media and from the only way people know what is happening, unless they happen to have a loved one deployed there, is discouraging. There are also good things going on that people don't have a chance to see. Schools are being built. There are parts of the country that are rebuilding. So I'd like to see the media give a more balanced view of it. She added she hopes for more balanced coverage by the media in the future. I understand why the polls are like that, because of the coverage we see every single day in Iraq. It's not encouraging coverage, to be sure. It's... okay, they've built some schools. Tell me, Laura. Yeah, ma'am. your first ladyness. Tell me how much electricity is going to those schools. Tell me how many of those schools they're rebidding have running water. Tell me what happens in those newly rebuilt schools, Mrs. Bush, when you try to flush the toilet. So, you know, once again, the tired, old, sickening canard of everything's wonderful there. We're not losing. You know, the next thing they're going to do, they're going to come out and say, well, you know, there aren't really nearly 3,000 dead people from it. It's two. It's really just two. I mean, it's not like you've got photographs of the coffins coming home now, is it? Huh? Mm-mm. How many funerals has my husband been to? My husband would have gone to funerals if there was more than a couple of dead people coming out of Iraq. That's how divorced from reality these people are. There's not a dime's worth of difference between Laura Bush saying they're just not reporting the happy stuff and Bill O'Reilly saying that cupcakes cause pregnancy. It's the same utterly separated from breathe in, breathe out, world turns on its axis, goes around the sun reality. It's as separated from that as Santa Claus is from the Easter Bunny. That is a divorce from reality. God. So, you know, please, and we're not done. We're not done. You know Bill O'Reilly's not the only crazy one. No. At the same time, I mentioned this at the top of the program. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. We will come back and, maybe it's time to talk about national shames. And maybe it's time to talk about a little recently held convention in Tehran. And the people you'll be surprised to find out attended it. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Mixed in with the piss and beer, our blood stains on the floor. From the boy who got his head kicked in a night or two before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. In the pubs, clubs and burger bars, breeding pens for pigs. Alcohol, testosterone and ignorance and fists. Packs of hunting animals roam across the town. They find an easy victim and they punch him to the ground. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Auto Workers and AFSCME have organized 40,000 Michigan home child care workers in a joint venture called Child Care Providers Together Michigan. Bargaining for a first contract starts soon with the state. Alice Norris is a home child care worker in Detroit, making $1.88 per hour per child with no health benefits.
It's just so awesome to have the union, just knowing that you have somebody responsible and capable of being on your side and working with you and for you. That's awesome.
Better pay and benefits will be sought by the unions as the first contract is negotiated. The workers won union representation through a card check majority certification process.
Having the union is almost like not having food on your table and finally someone has brought groceries.
These 40,000 new union members in Michigan are not state employees, but they're paid through state and federal funds. The Michigan Organizing Drive is part of a national labor movement effort that has recently formed unions for child care workers in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, New Jersey, Ohio, Oregon, Washington, and Wisconsin. A massive sweep of meatpacking plants to arrest undocumented workers may have resulted in the accidental arrest of some legal documented workers. Jesse Russell has the story.
A massive sweep at plants in six states resulted in the arrest of undocumented workers, shut down the world's second largest meat processing company for most of the day, and may have netted a number of legal workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers spent much of Wednesday trying to help families of documented workers locate missing family members. Nearly 1,000 U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents entered the plants owned by Swift & Company, carrying machine guns, separating citizens from non-citizens, taking away green cards, and putting the non-citizens on buses. The enforcers were sent to arrest as many as 170 identified suspects of alleged identity fraud. ICE Chief Julie L. Myers told reporters Wednesday morning that the identities and Social Security numbers of hundreds of legal citizens had been stolen and used to obtain jobs with Swift & Company. She said an unknown number of immigrants were arrested on Tuesday. The UFCW said the numbers could be as high as 5,000. The ICE said there are no plans to file any charges against Swift & Company. Here is today's economic report. Employment data through the first 5 years of the recovery, in comparison with four other recoveries of this length, shows job growth this time around to be the slowest on record. The Economic Policy Institute crunched the numbers and found that payrolls in both the private and public sector are down. The slow growth means it will take longer for working families to see gains.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Straighten out that chair.
Imagine this. My chair is straight and all the other chairs are out of order. Now, here's a real mind bender for you, right?
It's all cold down along the beach. The wind's whipping down the boardwalk. Hey, man! You guys know what time of year it is? What time? What? Oh, Christmas time. You guys all been good and practicing real hard. Yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So Santa, bring your new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good for what? Oh, that's not many. Not many of you guys in trouble out here. And you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's
making a list. About 17 or so minutes left in tonight's program. I hope it's been as much for you as it has for me. Now, the insanity of Bill O'Reilly in his cupcake pregnancy reference comes to you courtesy of a manufactured, what, dilemma? A manufactured controversy that has been covered in the media. If you've been with us for all 3 hours, you know that Cody and I discussed earlier in the evening why it is that the mainstream media won't do the hard work of real journalism to explain the importance of maintaining habeas corpus in the Constitution of the United States, that it protects, you know, it's not there exclusively to protect some illegal alien. It's there to protect American citizens. It was put in the Constitution to protect American citizens from its own government, from their own government. And as was noted, you're not exactly going to find magazines or newspapers or much in the way of journalism at all. God knows, not television. Falling all over themselves to explain the critical importance of habeas corpus. That kind of work is just too hard. So why this discussion? Why the Mary Cheney's baby has two mommies debate in the first place? Well, It's because instead of dedicating its pages to explain the importance of something like habeas corpus or explaining why no matter how many schools we build in Iraq, it doesn't matter, Time Magazine devoted untold gallons of ink to printing an article authored by none other than James C. Men Should Expose Themselves to Their Little Boy Children in the Shower, Dobson. That's right, James C. Beat Children Until They Cry Real Tears, Dobson, Parenting Expert. And Dobson, not unsurprisingly, fostered what became Bill O'Reilly's insanity with a column that cited or purported to cite scientific evidence that says that children are better off when their parents are of separate gender. You know, and of course they're going to say that because it marches in lockstep with their theory, bogus, that marriage is an institution between one man and one woman. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that Dobson has been called on his column. Among the things he wrote, with all due respect to Cheney and her partner Heather Poe, the majority of more than 30 years of social science evidence indicates that children do best on every measure of well-being when raised by their married mother and father. That is not to say Cheney and Poe will not love their child, but love... This is the kicker. This is the one that just really drives me through the roof. But love alone is not enough to guarantee healthy growth and development. That's why you can beat the children until they cry real tears, I guess. The two most loving women in the world cannot provide a daddy for a little boy. You know, is this the part where we go, oh, who was the idiot golf commentator a few years ago who said, well, you know, women can't hit the golf ball that far because their boobs get in the way. Remember? You know, I guess women can't throw a baseball with a little boy, and they're not supposed to throw a baseball with a little girl. Can't throw a football. Can't, you know, God knows there aren't any women out there that dig NASCAR like daddies and little boys would. I remember the day after Dale Earnhardt died and the lady that came to the door here asking Agnes to drive her across the river to the Ben Franklin store so she could get black crepe paper to decorate her car in memory of Dale. But it's lines like, more than 30 years of social science evidence indicates that children do best on every measure of well-being when raised by their married mother and father. Yeah, I love those families where mom and dad stay together for the sake of the children and wind up warping their children so badly that they themselves can't have a decent relationship 20 years down the road. Well, Dobson's been called. He cites the work of a social scientist, a psychologist named Carol Gilligan, and another psychologist, Dr. Kyle Pruitt. These people were cited specifically by Dobson in support of his deadheaded proposition. And it turns out that Gilligan sent the following to Dobson. I'm writing to ask you that you cease and desist from quoting my research in the future. I was mortified to learn that you had distorted my work this week in a guest column you wrote in Time Magazine. Not only did you take my research out of context, you did so without my knowledge to support discriminatory goals that I do not agree with. What you wrote was not truthful, and I ask that you refrain from ever quoting me again and that you apologize for twisting my work. The apology will not be forthcoming. Finally, there is nothing in my research that would lead you to draw the stated conclusions you did in the Time article. My work in no way suggests same-gender families are harmful to children or can't raise these children to be as healthy and well-adjusted as those brought up in traditional households. I trust that this will be the last time my work is cited by Focus on the Family. But ma'am, doc, no. They'll cite your work if they see fit, if they think that they can craft another filthy, bigoted, prejudicial lie out of it. Because in the main, they're fundamentalists, and what's more, they're Republicans, so lying is what they do. Oh, by the way, Republicans. Yeah, I mentioned earlier in the program that there was a little conference in Tehran. And the purpose of the conference, it was held by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Thanks, Bart. I just love that name. It was for the purpose of trying to prove that the Holocaust didn't happen just poof, and 6 million, 6 million murdered Jews just disappear. Yeah, the conference ended Tuesday. And, you know, they had all kinds of fun, you know, pin the tail. They played all kinds of fun games like pin the tail on the Hebrew. Or pin the vast Zionist conspiracy on the Israeli. They had little Israeli pinatas that their children, you know, it's just. But there was a final address. God, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this. Yeah, they were addressed, all right. Here's a quote. The Zionists have used the Holocaust as a weapon to deny the rights of the Palestinians and cover up the crimes of Israel. This conference has an incredible impact on Holocaust studies all over the world. The Holocaust is the device used as the pillar of Zionist imperialism, Zionist aggression, Zionist terror, and Zionist murder. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You, want to guess who those words came from? They were not from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Nope. It was from the former Republican nominee for governor of the state of Louisiana, David Duke. David Duke, author of Jewish Supremacism, My Awakening to the Jewish Question. And he says things like, the Jewish supremacists not only want to control Israel, they want to control America, Europe, and the whole world! Now, anyone who is passingly familiar with this program knows that I don't give a pass to Israel. I don't give a pass to bigots. I don't give a pass to people who want to blow up little Palestinian children And I don't give a pass to murderous bigots who want to blow up little Israeli children. And do. That's right. Former Republican gubernatorial candidate David Duke, and as far as I know, still registered Republican David Duke, went to Iran to inveigh against the Jews. Sort of makes your eyes roll back in your head when you realize how many rallies Clear Channel and Glenn Beck organized to burn Dixie Chicks discs, doesn't it? Man. And of course, why should we be surprised? Here's the media answer to David Duke.
A great hour coming up. The Blind Boys of Alabama are going to sing a bunch of tunes for us. I mean, they, you know, they're just an American treasure.
That is not an overstatement.
I remember when I first had them on a few years ago, how the Jewish management at whoever we worked for, CBS, whoever it was, bitching at me about it. You know,
careful there, Mel.
And well, not Mel. Mel's always okay. What it did.
Mel Gibson.
No, that's not the word. Obviously.
You met Mel Allen then.
But, you know,
they were dissing the handicapped African Americans.
Remember that?
Who loved the baby Jesus.
Yes. Remember that?
Absolutely.
We had a meeting in my office.
I recall.
The blind boys, no. No.
They were furious. But, of course, I don't care what they say and never have.
No.
How can you? Thank God. What, Barry?
Even if you wear a beanie, how can you not love beanie. The blind boys?
These guys.
Beanie. You mean a yarmulke?
I put it in terms that these money-grubbing bastards could understand. I said, and they're always worried about my image and all that sort of thing, you know. And I said, they're handicapped, they're black, and they're blind. How do we lose here?
And then
a light bulb went off of their over their scummy little heads.
All right.
And plus, they're great.
Yeah, and they are. Where is the downside?
Well,
explain that to me.
They probably.
Now we had. Well, I'm not even going to try to compare it with anything. But do you get the what I think we've done tonight is we have painted a picture. Or taken a snapshot of America right smack dab where it lives right now. We started with people shoved into buses who were legally here and held union cards. And we have gone through story after story after story, and the common thread that runs through every one of those stories is the fact that in some way, shape, form, or fashion, every single one of those stories has been a horror created and predicated upon Republican bigotry and hate. And oddly enough, America tolerates it. Where's the firestorm about this? Now, this thing from Imus. Oh, let's see. This thing from Imus is over a week old. Am I missing something here? Did this get half the attention of the Michael Richards rant? And that is by no, and that is not by way of excusing Michael Richards. Are we still not to that place in America where we can look at a bigot, an obvious bigot, scummy bastards wearing beanies? The Jews who run CBS. Somebody tell me what the difference is between, oh, Don Imus. Oh, he only does it to shock people. That doesn't matter what he does it for. He did it. What is the difference between Don Imus and his beanie and scummy Jew bastard comment? What's the difference between that and the Holocaust is the device used as the pillar of Zionist imperialism, Zionist aggression, Zionist terror, and Zionist murder? And did you? And by the way, you know, just in case you missed it, I managed to run in a handy little slur of African Americans. I thought, they're handicapped, they're black, and they're blind. How do we lose here? When do we get to a point in America where this is not tolerated? Oh, you're going to censor him. You don't like his free speech. No, no, no. The First Amendment guarantees these freaks a right to say what they say. It does not, however, guarantee them the right to be sanctioned in saying it by the American people, and the silence of the American people is their acceptance. Fair enough. I think so. So that's the program tonight. I hope you found something valuable in it, and we appreciate Agnes and I and everyone at the Horn, you sharing your time with us. The program tonight was, of course, produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn, and many, many other fine liberal talk programs. And he does it all for free. He merely asks that when you can support the White Rose Society, you do so. That's about as hard sell as it's going to get. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Much of our music comes from one of two sources, either B1 Louder Productions or our good friend Billy Shears. We have fabulous moderators and news ninjas who maintain the blog at headonradionetwork.com. And most of all, the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and go and build the American dream. And in building the American dream, they're able to support this network, and in supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.